Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio, the Investor Resources radio program. You have questions about what's in your portfolio or something that you were considering adding or subtracting from your portfolio, or a recommendation was made by your friendly financial advisor in the mall down on the street corner just a few blocks down the road from you. Give us a call. Phone lines are open. The number is 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. So we're here to talk about the markets as if there was anything to capture our attention.
Nothing to see here.
So we actually do. This was an interesting week. Not that they aren't all fairly interesting, but this was more so. In the various reading that we do during the course of the week, I saw somebody attribute the quote of when there's you buy when there's blood in the street. They attributed it to Warren Buffett, but they had it wrong because that was actually Jesse Livermore. Much earlier.
Way before, yeah. Right.
If you don't know who Jesse Livermore is and the rapid trading that he did, he made millions and lost millions. I mean, it was a
number of times, yeah.
He managed to whipsaw himself in the market at the time. But there were a run that was run on Wall Street in 29, and a lot of people lost a lot of money. Banks lost a lot of money. That resulted in the formation of the Federal Reserve and the FDIC and government intervention. Actually, it was Rockefeller intervention, but that became government. In any event, what we have seen are pictures of these people lined up at the banks demanding that they get their money back. They want their cash, and the banks don't have any. I mean, they've collapsed. You don't have to run to the bank anymore. You just pull out your phone, and you show up incognito and pull your money out, put it someplace else. And that's exactly what happened with the Silicon Valley Bank last week when a couple of major depositors decided they didn't like the looks of the bank's financials for whatever reason. They,
right.
Two big depositors just pulled their money out. And then afterwards, once they were secure, they got on social media and started telling everybody in the world that this bank, well, they didn't, I don't think they said it was going under, but they said, we've withdrawn all our money and feel a lot more secure, or something.
And you should too. Yeah, that was the message. We left, you should too. And it just spread like wildfire. They were done the second those first social media posts hit. Silicon Valley Bank was. They had no hope because it just cascaded on itself faster than it has ever happened before, because there's never been a run on a bank driven by social media before. So it happened quickly. And like you said, Don, nobody had to go to the bank. If you were stuck in traffic on the freeway, you could pull your money out from your phone. So nobody had to go anywhere. So it happened really quick.
So this is a strange new world for finance. The system as we know it is trying to figure out how to deal with it.
What do we do? I read an article, Don. It was so interesting. There was a bank run in 1907, substantial in the United States, and J.P. Morgan got all of their tellers together and told them, if someone comes in to liquidate their account, give it to them in small bills and count it out very slowly. So we're going to slow down how fast people can physically take their money out of the bank, because then that's what happened. You had to go, physically pick up the dollars. And so J.P. Morgan just said, well, we're going to do this very slowly, and we're going to slow this whole thing down. And it worked. They saved deposits because people just didn't have time to stand in line for 2 days. They just gave up, and it became obvious, well, okay, our bank's not going to go under, so we're going to be okay. So that's a strategy that won't work anymore.
No longer.
Can't do that anymore. No.
So what we did see happen was violate the standing insurance agreement that the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has had since its creation. But at $250,000, I think that was changed from $20,000 in the aftermath of the 87 market crash. It may be off a couple of years, but it's
somewhere right in there, though. You're right. Yeah,
And it was interesting when it looked like there was going to be a run on the bank. So the FDIC, through whatever process, said, well, we'll insure more than 20. We'll insure 250,000. And I remember commenting at the time, the way they did that was they immediately printed up new decals and sent them to all the banks to replace the 20 in the window with the 250. They did not add any reserves. They just printed new decals and people calmed down.
It was a safety sticker. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. It was a safety sticker. And I don't know what they're going to do now, because in this one, they violated the 250 and said, we don't care how much you have on deposit. We are going to make it good. And I looked at that and I said, well, then why do we have a banking system? It looks like the federal government is going to be the bank. So what happened here? And I very rarely get on Twitter, but I said, you know, I'm going to do this. So I got on Twitter and I said, the federal government decided to bail out its Democrat donors who are depositors, major depositors of Silicon Valley Bank. And I had a link to an article that basically said that. Twitter would not let me post it. I mean, I tried several different ways, and it kept saying, this is false. Well, let's see. SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, is primarily this funding source for Silicon Valley tech companies. And tech companies, probably 98% are Democrat donors. But according to Twitter, Elon Musk hasn't quite cleaned up all the bad people.
Got some more work to do there. Still a little filtering going on there, yeah.
Yeah, so that the flow of facts coming out of Twitter still has some excess woke screening on it. But we basically were bailing out venture capitalist investors and company executives. They were desperate that the bank and the depositors aren't going to lose any money. This is a problem for venture capitalists and venture capital.
They have to bank
trust
somewhere. Yeah.
Yep. They have to bank, and innovation comes from risk taking. And the real problem here is that during COVID, like every other bank and household and business, the bank got a ton of money. Nobody was borrowing. Right. So what do you do with it? Well, you look for something to buy. As a bank, you want it to be safe. You buy treasuries, but treasury bills pay zero. That didn't do you any good. You got the cash, but you aren't earning anything. So they bought longer-term treasuries, 20 and probably 30 years, so there are not a lot of those around. But so they've got this long-term debt, and they're making 2%. Well, that's better than zero. Now, how do you, as a bank, make money? You make money by lending money. Nobody's borrowing. So you've made this commitment in treasuries. And then post-COVID, inflation shows up. And in a year, the Fed decides to go from zero to almost 5%. When that happens, if you've ever been listening to us on our webinars, you know that bonds work like a teeter-totter. When interest rates go up, the value goes down. When interest rates go down, the value goes up. Well, we've been in an interest rate down environment since the early 80s. So who'd have thunk that this was going to reverse quickly? When that did, all of a sudden, those long-term bonds were.
Well, something just went south. I'm not sure if I'm on the air or not. Ah, very good. Okay, we've lost Don, but we were right in the midst of kind of highlighting what was going on with the bank collapse this week, and that the good news is on the banking side, I guess, is they did rescue many depositors that had far over $250,000. They had accounts worth millions of dollars. The Fed covered all of them. They didn't cover any of the investors. So at least if you were an investor in the bank, you got wiped out. If you had bonds that the bank issued, you got wiped out also. So they weren't insuring anyone other than depositors. But they did instantaneously change their insurance agreement and say, well, now we're just going to insure it essentially to an unlimited amount. And, you know, this time, if you were a depositor, that feels like it's a good idea. The bad thing is that they changed that so quickly and without regard to anyone else, and they can do it again. It's not always going to be in our favor. That's the other side to that double-edged sword. Are you back there, Don?
I am.
There you go.
And there's more to cover on this because it really creates a serious moral hazard within the banking community and with government, but we're due for a break here. So let's do that and come back and wrap up a couple more items on this issue.
Let's go ahead and take a break here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update webinar on the calendar scheduled for Saturday, April 1st. So you can join us on April Fool's Day, and we'll try to make sure we don't do anything too foolish with our money. You can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That is IRIradio.com. Just head to the webinar page and give that registration link a click. You're going to get an email back, and in that email, there's a link. And on April 1st, you just click that link. You're going to be live online with us, and you'll be able to take a look at the charts that we're talking about quite often. And we always cover some educational things. We cover what's going on in the market, in the economy. And then we always have plenty of time for anybody who logged in. You can post questions. We always get a lot of great questions on the webinars. So if you have questions about the market, if you have questions about individual securities in your account, it's a good time to get a second opinion. We can put those charts up for you and let you know what we're thinking about it. So it's well worth your time to log into that. That is, again, you can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. We'd love to talk to you this morning about all things economic and financial. If you'd like to get on the show, give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources.
Inflation is pushing its way toward 10%. I'm Don Creech, along with Perry Sykes. We host Investor Resources every Saturday morning. The Fed is no longer in the Alfred E. Newman "What Me Worry" camp. The Fed does not know how long current inflation will last or how many more times they will hike interest rates. Professionals are analyzing the new Federal Reserve plan for rate hikes, which are especially damaging to bond portfolios. Owning bonds is no longer a plan to protect capital. Have you adapted to a bond bear market and a bear market in stocks? Just what is your plan? Buy and hold isn't a plan. Adding bonds because you're older isn't a plan. Real risk exposure isn't a result of your age. It is a function of market conditions. Have you adapted yet? Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@IRIradio.com or call us at 800-317-9119. Be sure to register for our next stock market update at IRIradio.com. That's IRIradio.com.
Okay, looks like welcome back, everyone. This is the Investor Resources show. I'm Perry Sykes. Don Creech is struggling with some technical issues this morning. Sounds like he is... I'm sure he'll regain access to the show here and get back on us, get back with us shortly here. But we were talking about the banking crisis and, of course, the banks that went down this week. And, you know, do we have a systemic banking issue? You know, everyone's biggest question, of course, is, you know, is my money safe? Can I safely leave my money in the bank? And just right off the top, as far as we can see, the answer is yes, you can. The banks that went down this week were very specific cases. They were not systemic. And I think it's also important to remember that, you know, in a good old-fashioned bank run, people take their money out of the system. You take all your cash and you take it home. Right now, we have a regional banking crisis. The, quote, smaller banks are still very large and very, very significant financial institutions. They have a lot of money on deposit, but they're not as big as the, quote, too big to fail banks. And, you know, they're not as big as J.P. Morgan Chase. Those are enormous banks. They're not as big as Bank of America. And, you know, Bank of America, in the week following the failure of Silicon Valley Bank, they had $15 billion of new deposits come in. So the money's staying in the banking system. It's just shifting where it is. So it's not that everyone's taking their money and going to alternate sectors. They're staying in the banking sector. They're just not staying in the regional banks. So that's where the panic is. That's where and a lot of it is unwarranted. But, you know, banking panics are banking panics. And the more people, you know, feed into it. And of course, our friends on all the talking heads on cable are all, you know, the same. You know, so many of them are on, well, we're on the verge of a banking crisis, and the banking system is far more fragile than anyone thinks it is. Don't think that's true. We don't think that this is going to be a systemic issue. We don't think this is going to be something that spreads from bank to bank. But it does issue this last change by the Fed saying, well, you can deposit $10 million, and we're still going to cover that. When we were going to breakdown, was talking about the moral hazard it presents, and it does. It says that you can put in any amount of money you want, and then do whatever you want. And on the banking side, the bank can take more risks because they know the depositors are backed up by the Fed. So they don't have to worry about the real outcome business-wise for their depositors. So it takes away their natural fiduciary responsibility to be a caretaker for the funds that get put into their bank. They used to, you know, banks were very, very conservative because they never wanted to be in a position where they might have to go out of business. And so that was the primary concern, to make sure the bank is solvent at all times, which is why, you know, the old joke, if you need a loan, you probably can't get one. If you don't need one, they'll line up to loan you money because their only concern is to make sure they get paid back. And so with this change, that changes a little bit because they are no longer in charge of making depositors whole. The Fed is. The federal government's going to back them up. FDIC deposit insurance is going to back those up. And they're going to back it up to an unlimited amount, apparently, at this point. They haven't really put any limit on it. They can, of course, at any time they see fit. But, you know, the people who watch banks are hoping that, you know, that FDIC is insurance. The banking sector pays FDIC for that insurance, but they pay for insurance to cover up to $250,000. Right now, they're getting an unlimited amount of coverage. So hopefully their premiums will go up enough to cover that, because otherwise, you know, no matter what anyone says, we think that you're gonna end up paying for it as a customer, because banking costs, of course, are gonna get paid through either in higher interest rates for loans or higher fees for doing business with the bank. And so it's just not it's not free money. It's never gonna be. There's no such thing. Someone always pays the bill. And in a capitalist setup like we're in, that tends to be the end user. That's where all those fees and costs go. So we don't like the unlimited insurance. We don't like the unlimited insurance, even if they end up raising all of their FDIC deposit insurance premiums to the banking sector, so it pays for it. It seems like it takes part of the banking industry out of the banks. That's one of the things Don was talking about. It kind of nationalizes that part of the banking system. It says, nope, we're going to backstop the banks regardless of the size of those accounts. And that really does unleash the banks to take much more risk with your money. And that's not a good thing. it doesn't always have to be, you know, that risky. This is one of the first times we've ever seen a bank go under because they were buying U.S. treasuries. That's what happened, though. They had all those 10-year treasuries paying 1.5%, and the Fed raised rates so fast that it was like, well, then when they needed to liquidate those, no one wanted them. Why would they? You can get a 2-year for 5%. So the assets that they had stacked up to backstop their depositors became worthless because they couldn't sell it, and they couldn't sell it fast enough to make any difference for them. So that's part of the moral hazard. They're no longer going to be on the hook for that. Just like what just happened, the Fed's going to step in and pay for all of that. And that's just not, it's not a good position to be in. Anytime the government inserts themselves into business, it doesn't tend to end well. And especially in the banking industry, there's so much money there. Not that Washington, D.C. is not familiar with lots of money, but they're familiar with spending lots of money. And this, in the banking system, a lot of times it's conserving other people's cash that's important and not taking undue risks that are going to end up with a problem like they had last week and with no way out. And, you know, you can see the other side. The other side is, well, anytime you go in and you deposit money in the bank, should you be responsible to go through all the bank's financial statements and see what's the bank doing with their money? Are they sound or not? That's not reasonable either. So there's going to have to be some, you know, kind of happy medium that we get to in there, and it's going to, it's going to work itself out. But we hope and we think it would be, we'd be best if the government did the least they could. That's what tends to work best for them. You know, don't get too involved, and please don't jump in with 2 feet, because it's not a place that they're familiar with. And all of the banking institutions have been working under the same model for decades and decades, and it's working. And you don't need to come in and say, well, from now on, banks can be, you know, not as risky as they would like, but much, much riskier than they are now, because the federal government's going to backstop all of the depositors' money. And that really doesn't seem like a good idea. If there's any silver lining at all, there's a theory out there that a banking crisis could be fairly bullish for the stock market, which is kind of bizarre that anything that could happen to, you know, the major financial institutions of America could be good for anything. But historically, if there's a significant loss of trust in the financial system, and that's exactly what this is, of course, it's a loss of trust, there's nothing else that actually happened there. But those environments are almost always deflationary. It's almost always the economy is going to slow down. Everybody's going to take a breath in their own personal economies and slow down what they're doing. And if that causes the Fed to slow down their interest rate hikes, that could lead to, you know, inflation continuing down, not to mention all the commerce that may back up because people are starting to worry about the financial system in general. And that could set up stocks for a market rally. I mean, that could be true. You can see the path that could happen. The market right now is so interest rate sensitive that anytime there's a Fed meeting, the market jumps around because of what's going to happen with rates. And that's just short-term stuff. And if we end up with a significant banking crisis, which, you know, like I said, we really don't see that coming. We really don't think that's going to happen. But that kind of a slowdown in the banking system can cause a slowdown in the greater economy, which may lead the Fed to stop raising interest rates as fast, because they do have a responsibility. Of course, their primary responsibility is to keep the banking system healthy, and to continue the rapid pace that they have been increasing rates probably doesn't make much sense. Even though inflation is definitely not under control, they would have to begin to think, well, this banking scare is going to slow everyone down, and then that could lead to, you know, good news for the stock market. So it's a very difficult situation, and it's like I said, it's very new. It's the first bank run that was essentially technology driven, That's really how it happened. There's going to be some significant investigations now into what happened, especially those first two venture capitalists that pulled all their money out and then got directly online to tell everyone else, hey, if I was you, I would be heading for the exit right now. That's what we did. There's going to be a lot of talk about how that went down. What did they see? How did they know it? And, you know, why was the timing as it was? What happened there? So it's just the first time that rumors and social media panicked significant money. Venture capitalists pulled out over $40 billion in one day. And that's going to be significant for, you know, any bank. But a regional bank that doesn't have the wherewithal of a Bank of America, it's going to even be more significant. So it's one of those things that it happened. It was like a perfect storm, but it was essentially self-induced. There's not an issue in the banking sector that caused this to happen. It was the individual banks, all of their customers were the same, and they all did the same thing together because they're all online together. And when once word spread, it spread quickly and they all moved together. But there's not in banking, there's counterparty risk. A lot of the times this bank is holding the other bank's money or debt, and they don't have much at SVB. There really wasn't much there at Silicon Valley Bank. They didn't have a lot of counter deposit issues. So they're not, it appears at this time anyway, there's not a systemic component here. This shouldn't spread. Nothing else should be affected. Everything should be fine. And all the big banks are actually getting bigger. So all the money's going there. It's not leaving. That's one of the important issues, is that the money's not leaving the banking sector. The money's leaving the regional banking sector and heading for the larger banks. We are at the bottom of the hour. Time to get out of here for a quick break. I'd like to remind everyone that we have a weekly email newsletter, The Week in Review, which is a pretty good look at the week's financial news. And it kind of lets you know what's important and what you can probably safely ignore, which is a very good filter these days because there's so much financial noise out there. If you'd like to begin receiving that, you need to send us an email. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. We need just put Week in Review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name in the body of the email. And you'll be again receiving that on Monday. It goes out most Mondays, and it's a good read. We have de-link us anytime you want. You can unsubscribe quickly and easily, and it happens very rarely. People seem to enjoy that. So again, you can send us an email at help@iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us, we've got plenty of time, of course, 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at iriradio.com and log on for a free report. That's iriradio.com.
Investors are ignoring inflation and the changing economy. I'm Perry Sykes, and along with Don Creech, we host Investor Resources. Investors ignore warnings that lack immediate consequences. It's like running red lights without an accident. Soon, you think you're good at running red lights, but eventually, your luck runs out. Unfortunately, by the time most investors figure it out, it's generally far too late to do anything meaningful about it. Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@iriradio.com. Or call us at 800-317-9119. That's 800-317-9119. Register for our monthly stock market update at iriradio.com. Be prepared. Again, register for our monthly stock market update at iriradio.com.
Yeah, well, we have plenty of big spenders in government this time around, because along with the Silicon Valley Bank and the Republic Bank, Mr. Biden submitted his, I'm going to edit this, outrageous budget for this.
That sounds right,
year.
Yeah.
Yeah, with phenomenal tax increases, which he believes are economically stimulative. So when you've been confiscating 24%, of somebody's income, and you're now going to take almost 45%, they're going to be better off.
Really? Yeah, I need to see the math on that. Yeah.
And the corporate tax rate is going to go up to 28%, and on stock buybacks tax, that's going to increase 400%, go from 1% to 4% to discourage corporations from buying back their stock, which is a benefit to shareholders. We have a government that does not believe in capitalism, basically. That's where we are right now. In fact, I watched part of the testimony that the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, did with the Congress this week. And as they're going over this proposed budget from the administration, one of the questions was, do you understand what this will do to the federal debt over the next 10 years and how big it will be? And her answer was, no, I don't know. You're the Treasury Secretary, madam.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Well, I haven't looked that number up. Well, you would think that they would have talked to you about their budget and its impact, and you would have provided some guidance. I don't have right. a lot of respect for Janet Yellen, who is considered to be a very bright woman.
Right.
When she was chair of the Federal Reserve Board, in her testimony before Congress, after the fourth quarter of 18 quasi bear market had never really hit 20%, it hit 19 right. and a fraction.
Right.
In that following first quarter testimony, she told Congress, "We will never have another bear market in 500 years." I heard her say that.
Sure.
Well, since 2018, have we had another bear market or two?
I noticed something in there. Yeah.
And she comes into Congress to promote this bill and has no idea what it's going to do to the budget over the next decade. It's no wonder investors are a little jittery. Of course, Mr. Biden could have proposed this budget a year or more ago.
Sure.
When the Democrats had control of both houses. And so it begs the question, why did he not?
And why well, now? What's going on?
He knew that he had some conservative Democrats, there's a few still left, who would not vote for this. So even though he had majorities in both houses, he didn't have supporting majorities in both houses. And now he can propose it and tell us what he really believes, which is the government's smart, knows what to do better than you. Give us your money. That's the policy.
That really is it. That's it.
It's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
It's going nowhere because it's never going to get out of the House of Representatives. And I'm not sure the Senate will spend much time dilly-dallying around with it. So we have big spenders in the Fed. In fact, the Fed has been, along with raising interest rates to damp down inflation, they have been withdrawing liquidity. They've been letting bonds mature that they own and not buying more bonds. That's called quantitative tightening, and that will reduce the amount of money in the system, and people will end up having less, and the economy will slow down, inflation will slow down. Well, now that we have this banking debacle, I don't like to call it a crisis because it's not affecting the entire system except through social
Correct.
Media panic.
Yeah.
But now that we have this debacle with the two banks, one of them was the venture capital at Silicon Valley, and the other is cryptocurrency with Republic Bank, and they basically were laundering money for crypto-related transactions. So they were already under investigation by the Justice Department, and this weekend just said, "That's enough. We're gonna shut
gotta
it
go."
Down.
So yeah, they weren't even very concerned with hiding their tracks. I mean, there doesn't seem to be much question about they were just straight up money laundering for crypto transactions, and that was it. So they definitely needed to go. They were a bad actor in the banking sector for sure.
There were two commonalities between these banks. At Silicon Valley Bank, there was one exception to this commonality, and that all the boards of directors were appointed because of their Democrat donations, Democrat Party donations. And some of them may have been gatherers. I don't know if it was individual, but they managed to gather enough money. They were political appointments. And until the fourth quarter of last year, Silicon Valley Bank, as Republic, they had nobody on the board with banking experience or risk management experience. Now, SVB, late in the year, did put a board member on who had some experience. But these were two banks who were run by people who knew nothing about banking or investing. They just were political appointments. Because they know better than we do.
That shows exactly how they got in so much trouble so quickly. Yeah, it's not a good idea to put someone in charge of anything that doesn't know what they're doing, let alone tens of billions of dollars of other people's money. And it wasn't going to end well. And you know that begs another question: how to go on so long without anyone noticing? I don't know, or without anyone doing anything about it. Hopefully, that's going to be part of the investigation that goes on here.
Well, the answer to that question, Barry, I think, is as long as interest rates hadn't started going up, everything was running smoothly. So if we hadn't had inflation and hadn't had rising rates, nobody would have known the difference. It would have just been hunky-dory, business as usual. But we have to ask some basic questions about this bank panic, I guess is the way to label it. And one is this the Fed's fault? Because the Fed's the one that raises rates.
Right.
I think we have to start with saying, well, what started inflation? Did the Fed start inflation? Well, let's say
not
they
really.
Were a contributing factor, though, because they kept interest rates really cheap while the economy was humming along and didn't really need cheap money.
So yeah, way too low, way too long. Yeah, that's true.
And with low interest rates, the federal government didn't have to address the rising cost of expanding debt. I mean, when we were financing federal debt at 2.5% for 30 years,
right?
What's to worry about?
This is that's Alfred free Newman. Money. Yeah.
What, me worry? Yeah. And this is, it's amazing. So the Fed was a contributing factor, but the big problem was, as we have learned, They lied to us about the virus, and they lied to us about the vaccines and the boosters and the mask, and now they're lying to us about what's going on with the banking situation and the impact of rising taxes and increasing federal debt. The real problem is a credibility problem with the government.
Sure.
and now with the Fed, because the Fed is stuck in a position here of, we're now going to bail out any bank as long as they're in a blue state, because that was something else that Janet Yellen was asked. Well, what if this bank had been in Ohio? Would you have bailed it out? And she hemmed and hawed, and they repeated the question, and she finally said, well, probably not. So if it had been in a red state, the Fed would not have done, the government wouldn't have done this.
But that's pretty disturbing.
In a blue state. And it's in the heart of Silicon Valley, which is dark blue. It's not purple. It's dark blue. Well, then there's no question. We're going to bail those people out. And the Republic Bank on the East Coast is a similar situation. So that's another part of the moral hazard. Who do you believe, and how safe is the federal deposit insurance if you're only going to bail out the banks that vote for you? That issue is really not clear. But we did get a question. I got an email this week about the money that you have in cash at your brokerage firm. And the question specifically was from an individual who is not a client but has their account at Schwab. And SIPC insurance, which we refer to as SIPC, it's the counterpart to the FDIC. They guarantee accounts up to $500,000, $250,000 of which can be cash. They don't guarantee the value of your accounts, but if a broker-dealer goes under over a weekend like Bear Stearns or Lehman Brothers did, your account is going to be secured. You will get the assets that you owned on the day of default. And so when basically they transfer them to another brokerage account and you get a new password and open up your to get access, but your account's still there at Schwab. I didn't go in and verify the current amount, but the last time this issue came up a number of years ago, Schwab carries supplemental insurance up to $25 million. So, I mean, and if you've got an account bigger than that, you might want to split it between some registrations or at least maybe open another brokerage account. But if you're under that, that's not an issue. Don't let it stay you awake, not keep you awake at night.
Right.
So one
that's
of the
important
questions is this bullish for the stock market? Well, this is a problem for the Fed. What are you going to do? You have to maintain the stability of the banks, but you're supposed to bring down inflation by raising interest rates. So you raise interest rates and you destroy the value of the long-dated bonds that the banks hold as part of their portfolio. Well, that's not good.
It's not. That is a problem. Don, let's get into that after our break. We are right up against our last break of the morning here. And there's plenty more to talk about those issues. Like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update webinar on the calendar. That's scheduled for Saturday, April 1st, 8:30 in the morning. You can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Just head to the webinar page and click that registration link and you will be good to go. We've got a full segment left here this morning. Plenty of time to get your call on the board. If you'd like to talk to us, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Warren Buffett's rule one is don't lose money. Rule two is remember rule one. I'm Don Creech. Along with Perry Sykes, we host Investor Resources. No professional or successful investor ever bought and held for the long term without regard or respect for the risk undertaken. Groceries and gasoline are more expensive, crimping consumer spending, the lifeblood of our economy and the stock market. As the economy slows, portfolio risk increases. A balanced portfolio is not a plan to protect capital. Rebalancing isn't a plan to protect capital. Buy and hold isn't a plan to protect capital. After you have losses, it's too late to do anything meaningful about it. Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@irradio.com or call us at 800-317-9119. Be sure to register for our next stock market update at irradio.com. That's irradio.com.
Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that
should
you
I stay
are
or should I go? That's a constant question for us to deal with every day, every week, twice a month. It's constant. Clients want to know. Investors want to know. But all of our accounts, all of our models that we run, the three that we run at Schwab and the five that we run in the 401k accounts are all on defense. Mm-hmm. It's been a tough year. In fact, investors could have been in the market for a couple of years and find out that they just haven't gone anywhere. The intervention of government with COVID was an attempt to find out how responsive and compliant populations were, and it was orchestrated in part by the World Economic Forum, the CDC, the World Health Council, whatever they call that. And let's see what we can do here. We've never had this opportunity. Basically, between government edict and social media, everybody just said, okay, we'll do what we have to do. But now we don't have any money because we're not working, unless, of course, you're in an industry that they like. Felt was essential. But now here we are trying to unwind the damage that was done from that process. And in the process of that, the Fed is trying to figure out how do we keep the economy from overheating? We've got to underheat it. And generally, a crisis in the banking industry is disinflationary, if not deflationary. Well, if we lose faith in the banking system, that's a real problem. And so that's part of the reason that the Fed did what it did
Sure.
over the weekend. And with that, the effort to contract the money in the system was reversed. I mean, I do an end-of-week risk-on, risk-off report, and one of the charts early in my report that I'm still working on is the Fed's assets. And they grew. The declining asset trend has been reversed. They've added $300 million in order to bail out the two banks and the FDIC. Some of the money went directly to the bank. Some of it went to the FDIC to help backstop the general depositor system. But if it's disinflationary or deflationary, well, the stock market is going to quit worrying about fighting inflation. And if the fact that the Fed is actually de facto quantitative easing, it's no wonder the market's confused. I have a chart on the bond trader activity. And it is a train wreck when you look at
right.
it. And
right.
the volatility factor this week reached similar levels. The only level higher on the chart in about more than 20 years was the Lehman crisis.
And that shows the level. That shows the level of chaos out there right now. No one knows what direction this is going to go. No one knows where all the pieces are going to land, and you can kind of create almost any scenario you want right now. So it's actually time to be defensive. Don't do anything that you think is going to looks like it's going to be highly profitable, because that could change in a minute these days. So it's caution is the word of the day right now.
Part of what gave the market hope in January was that China was undoing its COVID zero policy. It just canceled it outright. It didn't have a plan to open up. It just canceled it because of the riots that were beginning to surface in a number of the provinces. And so the assumption was, well, COVID zero is gone. That means the economy will resume. We'll have this massive group of consumers coming back into the marketplace, driving demand. Well, that's not quite happening as rapidly, and they aren't handling the lack of COVID policy. I mean, they had more people ill. The hospitals were overwhelmed. The crematoriums are overwhelmed. They've got serious problems. The real estate business over there, which is a massive industry, is still in dire straits. And so the current lower growth assumption of 5% coming out of China is now in doubt. I spoke with one of my friends in Arizona this last week, and he's hanging on to his oil investment because he had heard that by the end of the year, oil should be trading around $100 because growing global demand. That might happen, and it could be even higher than that when we move into next year, because supplies are tight. If we have a globally expanding economy, we don't have the ability to generate enough oil, and it's going to become a supply-demand auction. Who has the money? They're going to bid the price up, and they're going to take the supply. That could happen. But with China's uncertainty here about whether or not they're even going to have, let's say, 2 or 3% growth, that demand's not very high. Their industrial manufacturing base is not coming out of their recession. The real estate business is not coming out of their recession. So buying a story doesn't help unless you have a very long-term objective and a very deep-seated belief, because
sure.
you need to adjust to what's actually going on today. And most investors don't. They say, well, I'm a long-term investor. Okay. But it took, after the tech bubble, I mean, it took 17 years to get even because you weren't paying attention. Gold, which is beginning to show some life hasn't caught up with 2011 yet.
But so think about that for a second. Yeah, gold today is still right at the same level it was in 2011. So there's no big, the number of gold commercials on TV is just exploding again. And they're out there pushing their product as hard as they can. And first of all, that should be a red flag for everyone that they have to push the product. If it was this magical metal, they wouldn't even have to try to sell it. People would be lined up to get it as fast as they could. But that's not the case. So like everything else, don't listen to the narrative about, well, this is the secure place to put your money in times of inflation. Hasn't done much so far this time around in an inflationary environment. So just look at the numbers and don't listen to the story. The story can really cause you a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and gold's not an inflation hedge. Gold did well during inflation of the 70s because it had been price regulated by the government at $35. And when Nixon deregulated the price, there was pent up demand that drove gold prices up at the same time that we had different issues causing inflationary pressures, demographic issues. The baby boomers were coming into the economy and it was such a big population surge. Everything they needed was in short supply. The country wasn't ready for that. That pushed up inflation. The deregulation of price allowed gold to rise along with it, but putting those two together and saying they're correlated is an error.
Correct.
Well, so the issue that we have is, what do you do with the portfolios? You've got to pay attention. If you don't pay attention to your account, then you basically are taking your eyes off the ball and are in a position where you'll be viewed as a patsy. You're not going to do anything, then we're open to having manipulation in things that we own, particularly if you're in individual company issues, more so there than if you're using a mutual fund or an exchange traded fund where you do have broader diversification. But even there, you end up with manipulation possibilities. As the Federal Reserve illustrated this week in what they're going to do with the banking system, intervening and going beyond their mandate to take care of things. And we're not alone. I mean, we have a Credit Suisse over in Switzerland. That bank is probably going to collapse. I mean, the stock fell below $2 this last week.
Right, right. And again, that's nothing new for them either. They've been in bad. They've been in trouble for a long time, and it's just now coming to a head. So, yep.
So, what happens in this kind of turmoil is people don't know what to do. If you lose your job,
sure.
More often than not, you probably are going to take money out of your 401k because you don't know what's going to happen to it. And often,
happens
people
a lot.
Forget to pay attention. Once they leave a job, if they leave their 401k there, they forget about it. And if it's less than $5,000, then the plan can disgorge the money. They used to send you a check, and now they send you a new IRA statement, but they get rid of it themselves. Now, we're coming up at the end of this show. You want to talk to us during the week or have us take a look at your account or an investment that you're considering, we'd be glad to do that. It's a freebie. All you have to do is send us an email, help@iriradio.com, and tell us what you want to look at. Give us a stock ticker is all we need to know. If you don't know the ticker, tell us the name of the company, and we'll be glad to do that. We'll probably send you a report on it for you to consider. Sign up for the next webinar, first Saturday of the month. That's when we do those. And that's 8:30 in the morning on Saturday. And we go over what the recent activity of the market is, review our portfolio positioning and our portfolios, to get a real feel for what the market is demanding your attention. We're out of time. God bless you, your family, and the United States of America. Lord willing, we'll be back next Saturday.